Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We are going through the Constitution. It is Constitution Week, and we kick Constitution Week, or as far as I'm concerned, this is the Constitution show. That's the only way we're going to be able to reclaim the Republic. I just want you to understand, you have to start connecting the dots here, folks, that if we're going to reclaim the Republic, we first have to start understanding the Constitution. This is why we go through the ratification debates, and once a year, we actually go through the Constitution to celebrate, to recognize this almost perfect document that the good Lord inspired our framers to create to ensure that we had everything to guard against evil, the subjugation, despotism, and tyranny that typically befalls upon a free people. And so we are going to go through the Constitution to the degree we need to. Now, what we end up doing is we end up re-airing this, just like the ratification debates. We will record them, and then about 6 months later or what have you, so that we can go through this again. Why do you read the scriptures? Why do you read the same things over and over again? Any good Christian or any person that is driven to improve themselves, to figure out what they need to do, they have a reference guide that they constantly go to. And those people who cling to and regularly read those things like their scriptures or whatever it is that's your guide in living a better life and getting yourself, you know, attuned. And we actually go through setting effective objectives and goals for one's, you know, for one to become successful. And the reason we go through these things is we can't become successful in reclaiming the Republic if we don't understand what we have to restore. We literally have to understand the Constitution, how it is applied, and how we need to get back to restoring it. Or, maybe that's not the best way of saying that. Maybe we need to understand what we need to do to restore our hybrid constitutional republic, to place the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution again. So we're currently in we're still in section 2 of Article 4. And Article 4 is kind of like some clarity and some declarations and information that the framers felt it was important to help clarify, you know, the responsibility over territories, the responsibility of states entering into the Union, that the concept that God gave the framers wasn't to just create a group of states and, you know, how they would function as that group of states forevermore. God gave us a plan of his plan of globalism, how we could literally move and proclaim liberty to the entire world so that the entire world wouldn't need to go into such a despotic type of government like the UN. The Constitution gives us the actual solutions of what we need to do. And so when a state comes along and joins the UN, they become a voting member immediately. Well, coming into the United States, you first have to adopt, you have to make adjustments for your legal system, your money, and other things, language, those things, so that you can function. The question is a state that is a nationalist by design? Let's just take Estonia. Estonia broke away from the Soviet Union after the Cold War was over and after the wall came down, and they're an independent state. And Estonia, they're a very free people. Are they willing to see the advantages of joining and guaranteeing to their posterity justice and tranquility and the things that this Constitution In other words, folks, you don't have to come to the physical land of the United States. You can bring it to you. This is why I tell people all the time, and we need to start sending this message to Trump. Trump needs to start appealing to Hong Kong, to Taiwan, and every other nation in the world. Why do you not petition to become a territory and work your way to becoming a state in the United States? Abandon your membership and all of these other types of associations if you want your people to enjoy freedom and liberty the way it was instilled in our hybrid constitutional republic. So anyway, as you know, the show is sponsored by ReclaimTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And we are going to just dive straight in. So without any further ado, here we go. Now, we were just getting into Section 2 regarding slave labor. And what I wanted to do was I wanted to give you this and contrast this statement that's still in the Constitution, and this again goes back to better evidence to prove why we need to start injecting these amendments right into where they belong, because all of these words do not apply. They're no longer legitimate words. They've been amended per the 13th Amendment, actually. The 13th Amendment B, because there's obviously a 13th Amendment A out there that most people don't even know. Anyway, and I'm sure that people listening to this show probably do know. Anyway, Article 4 states this, and this is the slave labor clause. No person held to slave labor in one state under the laws thereof, escaping into another state, shall, in consequence of any law or regulation therein, be discharged from such service or labor, but shall be delivered up on claim of the party to whom such labor may be due. This was an appeasement to the slave states, the southern states, who wanted to be able to maintain slavery. And they basically kind of held all of the three states, held the other 10 states, or actually, because Rhode Island really was non-involved in this, so it was really nine states, 3-9, 3-1. And they still erred on the side of slavery. This was one of America's greatest or most tragic political compromises ever. When we had the opportunity to end slavery here and then, it was going to, you know, allow us to start anew. But instead, we had to go another 100 years almost, another century, in oppressing a class of people, not because it was our choice, but it was something we inherited from Britain. And three states wanted to cling to that British oppressive rule. Anyway, so this is what the 13th Amendment states. Neither slavery nor involuntary servitude except as punishment for crime. So I want you to hope you understand. If you are a criminal and you've committed a crime, you can be put to slave labor, whereof the party shall be duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. So what I just said was there, slavery or involuntary servitude, being a serf, is illegal in the United States. And bottom line is it shall not, just like it says, shall not exist in the United States or any place subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. And the little clause here is the clause that Congress started adding in almost all of their amendments. Congress shall have the power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. Well, that's true. And if they need to enforce these laws that they create in tandem to this amendment and in pursuant to the Constitution, they must call forth and federalize the militia to enforce those laws in accordance with Article 1, Section 8. Because nowhere, Nowhere in the Constitution will you find that the federal government has the ability to create any other agency than the militia for the execution, because the word execution does not exist, or the enforcement of the laws of the Union, anything like that. It just does not exist. That's why only the militia has the constitutional role, responsibility, and power to support those laws in pursuant to the Constitution. So anyway, let me move on. I don't want to drag a dead horse. We're into Section 3 now, and this is about new states. New states may be admitted by the Congress into this union, but no new state shall be formed or erected within the jurisdiction of another state, nor any state be formed by the jurisdiction of two or more states or parts of states without the consent of the legislatures of the states concerned, as well as of the Congress. Now, see, there's a real problem with this, because a lot of times legislatures do not want to give up. And I believe there needs to be a review of this, because I believe if the plight of the people that want to break away from the state because the state is oppressive and not abiding by the Constitution, well, I'd love to see the federal government enforce the Section 4, and we'll get into that. But I do believe that there is a need for exceptions for this one very particular thing, because I honestly would see that Oregon would be split in half, Washington State would be split in half. I believe California would be split in several different ways, and that would be a good thing, because then we have more opportunities of variance to our governance within our republic. We'll be right back after these promos. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in, and let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so let me repeat one very important point. I've got to go over this. Where was the qualifier for this? New states may be admitted by the Congress into this union. Any qualifiers? The following was, no new state shall be formed or erected within the jurisdictions without the other legislatures having, and I kind of qualified, there needs to be an exception to that part of this clause or this portion of the Constitution. because I believe it is the obligation of the United States Constitution to ensure that citizens within states are not being oppressed, you know, by whatever the demographics are. And in all honesty, when one looks at the population centers, the metropolises, they tend to take advantage of the rural areas. And the paradigms of the people that live in the rural area from the city are completely different. And it is clear, it is a part of our founding that the majority shall not dictate or shall not rule, mob rule, over the minority. The Constitution's design is to protect the minority. So, is there a qualifier to that? You've heard me say this several times. New states may be admitted by the Congress into this union. It's pretty clear, folks. Trump could actually go out and have these other nations, such as Taiwan, Hong Kong, and all of the rest of these, Crimea, and so forth, have them apply to become a state in the union. That doesn't mean, folks, that they're going to become a state in the next year. They will take time. Look at Puerto Rico and how long Puerto Rico has taken to really be qualified to become a state, to even have that position to, you know, have that election or that finality of becoming a state. Point is, how many wars and how much manipulation would these dividers and the global elitists be able to do if all of a sudden more and more states became a part of the United States? That means because we would not have, states have states' rights, and states would be able to do some of the things that they believe is important, and they need to look at what these state rights are, and they should be able to recognize what an opportunity it is for their posterity to enjoy guaranteed liberty for the rest of their lives. Anyway, the next one is the Congress shall have power to dispose of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory or other property belonging to the United States. So what happens with Hong Kong when they become a territory? They fall under Congress's power. I'm telling you, it would put China on their heels. It would put Russia. It would put the UN on notice. Folks, this is the message. Here's the shot across the bow to the globalists. And why is it that people like Jordan Peterson and these really brilliant minds can't understand what the heck we've got here in this Constitution? So anyway, so Congress shall have the power to dispose of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory or other property belonging to the United States, and nothing in this Constitution shall be so construed as to prejudice any claims of the United States or of any particular state. So in other words, that doesn't give them the right to be able to make claims to state land once a state becomes a state, such as land that the United States decided to create a territory or a reservation for forest people. It doesn't matter. You've heard me say this before. The Constitution does not give the federal government the power to create territories or reservations or take any land out of a state. Once a state has been formed, that is their land completely. The only land that becomes federal land is for those needful buildings like ports and harbors and the needful buildings on airports, because clearly the federal government has the role and responsibility to ensure all commerce, if it's international airport or what have you, goes through them. But they don't have the ability to seize lands, take it. There's nowhere in this Constitution that has granted them that power, and we've yet to find it. And that's the point. So the Department of Interior, the Department of Forestry, all of these departments that are sitting on and possessing land, the Environmental Protection Agency, they're unconstitutional. And their seizure of state land is unconstitutional. This is why we go through this, my friends. Okay, so Section 4, this is the huge one. The United States, and this is the one we need to start really haranguing President Trump and our politicians on. the United States shall guarantee in this union a Republican form of government. Now, that's something that I don't think that, you know, anybody recognizes how far off we are. Why is it that states have bicameral legislative bodies, but they don't actually function politically through the process and representation and sovereignty? They don't function as a bicameral legislative body. Counties are not represented in the Senate. It is all apportioned by people. And that is not that does not align with the constitutional design. Anyway, the part of the guarantee clause, because that's what we just read, the United States shall guarantee to every state in the union a Republican form of government and, well, there it is, and shall protect each of them against invasion. Did you just get this? So the guarantee clause not only guarantees that we shall have protection from, okay, from this thing called a Republican form of government, and what the heck does that mean? But more importantly, the United States shall guarantee that the states will be protected from an invasion. So what is an invasion? This is why my third article, The Unseen Teeth of the Constitution, is so critical. You need to go and review that article, because what is an invasion by definition? It is a group of people that have come and, if you know, that are unwanted. They're trying to do things. They're violating your laws and so forth. They are considered and can be considered combatants. An invasion is typically a combatant force. Now, people look at Mexicans and the people south of our border, or even Chinese and other people that get into Mexico and come across our border, as, well, they're not combatants. They're not military. There are different forms of combatants, and the combatants that are coming across our border illegally are political combatants. They try to engage in our political system, and they are working ardently to undermine and subvert our government. It is that simple, that clear. We are living, you know, when I say we're living under an insurrection, there's the insurrection right in our face, and then there's these little tentacles of insurrections that are occurring, such as this invasion. So let's just say, okay, 20 people that came across the border in the history of our border, that would not be considered an invasion. Or maybe, you know, a trickling. There's a little bit of trickling that never amounted to anything more than 100. Well, would that be an invasion? No, not really. But when we talk about tens of thousands on a monthly basis, and when we talk about millions, 20 million illegal aliens, and these concepts of DACA and so forth are outright violations of the Constitution. I believe that what we need to do is we need to hold our Constitution as it was defined and follow it and enforce it. And I believe we also need to go after people like Obama and Clinton and impeach them. They need to have their emoluments, their privileges, quote unquote, stripped from them. They do not deserve a penny and any effort from our Secret Service and our security services and transportation and briefings. They don't deserve any of that. And I want you to understand, when this Constitution was written, that concept wasn't even on the table. That's why it's not in the parchment. If they would have said, oh, this becomes the president becomes a lifetime position. Oh, okay. Then the impeachment of a president should span from once they've become elected throughout the rest of their life then. And they should be able to be impeached as long as emoluments are being provided to that president, surviving spouse, what have you, then though they have to be able to be impeached, because the whole point of impeachment is not to punish a crime. The whole point of impeachment is to dictate whether somebody has whether the president or the vice president has violated their oath of office and committed if they've committed a crime or what have you. It is not to punish that crime. It's to determine whether they have done so and what punishment, and the severest punishment of an impeachment is the stripping of all emoluments and complete censorship. They're not allowed to be referred to as the president, former president, or a dignitary. They're to be completely stripped of any privileges and recognition. And that's what we need to do to every single one of these tyrants that have violated our Constitution. Clinton, I could give you a laundry list. Obama, the same thing. Bush, the same thing. This is not about Democrats and Republicans. This is about people who are living up to their oath and supporting the Constitution and people who were not. Anyway, okay, so the United States shall guarantee. So we're going into a break. So I'll get back and close out this guarantee clause because there actually is another part to this. And I'm sorry for the rant. So we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so let me finish this guarantee clause because there's actually something else to it. So I'll start over again because I'm just going to add this next addition to this. The United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion. So that's what they have to do. They don't have to have a request from the states, hey, please stop this invasion. The states shouldn't even have to do that. It is right here, an obligated duty and promise that the United States will protect the states from an invasion. Then, the semicolon, right? So new thought, new add-on. And on application of the legislature or of the executive, when the legislature cannot be convened, against domestic violence. In other words, they will protect each of them from an invasion and on application. So in other words, what's going on with Portland? If Portland fails to actually request that the states, or I should say the citizens, are, you know, their rights are being taken away and so forth, the federal government should receive application from the legislatures. However, If the legislatures who are out and the executives are in and the executives do nothing like what Inslee did with Seattle through an act of omission, he violated the Constitution because he should have asked for the federal government to come in and remove these insurgents that took over Seattle, the people that are running amok in Portland and in Minneapolis and in Baltimore and in every single state across the union. It is that important that if the state and the governor fails to do so, and they don't request because they're doing nothing technically, as we've talked about Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, the president should have his Department of Justice come in and remove every political hack that is failing to live up to their oath and remove them and ban them from public service. And I'd like to see Congress and the Supreme Court try to defend these insurgencies, because then they would be removed, because they too are obligated in protecting life and property of U.S. citizens. You do not have a right to protest. You've heard me say this before over and over and over. In America's first protest, 24 of those protesters were arrested on the charges of treason, and two were convicted in 1791 during the Whiskey Rebellion. Folks, this is really important. You need to get this. You need to understand what the heck's going on. And this is why we have to, we must enforce the Constitution. We must enforce the oath of office for all public servants, all of them. I mean, we're not supposed to be supporters of Trump. We're not supposed to be supporters of the party, but we are all supposed to be supporters of the Constitution, period. I mean, you can't butter your bread on all six sides. You have to make the choice whether you are going to be a patriot or whether you are going to be in support of the rebellion against the Constitution. It's one or the other. And if you're, even though you may not be giving aid and direct support, failure to support the Constitution is an act of omission, and it is a violation of our responsibility. Because as a matter of fact, Madison was the one that stated that all public servants, I'm adding because he was talking about the responsibility of state legislatures, but all public servants who have taken an oath are duty bound and obligated to step in and arrest the evil assault upon our Constitution. It's, I don't know, maybe I just simplify things, folks. I just don't know. But anyway, Article 5. Now we're actually in Article 5, and this is the only method. Protests and votes and democracy have nothing to do with changing our laws. They're the only way we can change and give the federal government the ability to create laws regarding the environment, health care, or anything else is via an amendment. This is why when they tried to create the Department of Transportation, this is why I actually read those three vetoes by Madison, Monroe, and Andrew Jackson, how these presidents stated that the power does not exist within the Constitution to create a Department of Transportation. If you want that power, if the citizens of the United States want that power to be delegated to the federal government, it must be amended to the federal government in an amendment to the Constitution. And so Article 5 is that process. But what most people don't realize is there's this little thing at the end of Article 5 that talks about protecting the Constitution from two very specific types of amendments. It's called the Amendment Protection Clause. And a lot of people don't even look at it that way. But that's what it is. And so anyway, Article 5, the Congress, whenever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution, or on the application of the legislatures of two-thirds of the several states, shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which in either case shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of this Constitution when ratified by the legislatures of three-fourths of the several states – or by conventions in three-fourths thereof, as the one or the other mode of ratification may be proposed by Congress. Okay, so there's the two ways. There's two paths. There's the path of Congress to actually, you know, create it and send it out to the states for ratification, or the states can apply to make a change. Folks, there are only four reasons why we need an amendment to the Constitution, because the Constitution is broke and we need to fix it. And there's no evidence that the Constitution is broke. Well, the other reason would be to give the federal government more power. Well, why would we want to do that? And as a matter of fact, what we need to do is get them to only function on the powers granted. The other form, the third form of an amendment, would be to remove powers that the Constitution has granted to the federal government. I think the Constitution is right on. We need them to fight the wars, look at our external securities, national securities, and so forth. And, you know, the militia, the federalizing, all that stuff, I think is perfect. We just need to abide by it. The fourth reason for amending the Constitution is to make significant or wholesale changes. And these are the four reasons why there would be a convention to amending the Constitution. And I am here to tell you that none of those reasons are justifiable, and I cannot fathom any reason why we would want to convene a constitutional convention. I believe with Republic Review, the states will be able to say, hey, we think you need to amend the Constitution this way to empower us a little better and to constrain you more. And I will bet you, I will bet you that if the states clarified and articulated very specifically what they needed to do, there's no doubt in my mind. Every single amendment that came to being, the Bill of Rights, all of these things that have been amended to the Constitution were primarily directed by the states. Even the 17th Amendment was directed by the states. But, oh, that reminds me, that's where this Amendment Protection Clause is. So let's dive into this thing. The Amendment Protection Clause is just a short little, you know, maybe four lines here. It's basically one sentence. It's a long run-on sentence, but most parts of the Constitution are. And this is what it says. Provided, okay, so now that these constitutional amendments can be proposed by Congress or by the states, and once they're ratified, they become the supreme law of the land. Provided that no amendment which may be made prior to the year 1808 shall in any manner affect the first and fourth clauses in the ninth section of the first article. Now, what that means and what they're saying is you cannot, the states or Congress cannot provide an amendment that will shut, that will stop the shutting down of the slave trade. So in other words, folks, if you understand that there were some things put into the Constitution as political compromises, okay? A lot of people didn't like the idea that runaway slaves would have to be returned, and that's actually in the Constitution. Here was the counterpart, that they made it a constitutional mandate that the slave trade would be shut down in 1808, and they created this protection clause to say you cannot amend the Constitution that will remove or affect this clause of shutting down the slave trade. And that's why they never went down that path. That's why the slave trade did get shut down. And that's why we eventually woke up morally and shut down slavery around the world. But here is the more important part of the Amendment Protection Clause, because it is being violated by seven states are being forced to violate this protection. In other words, they're protected from having to allow the election of their senators, because it says, provided, again, I'm going to start off at the top, provided that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. In other words, they have to actually give consent if there is an amendment to remove the state legislature's suffrage in the Senate to go to the people. So the 17th Amendment actually violates the Constitution. Anyway, We're at the end of Article 5, so now we're going to get into Article 6. We may even get into Article 7 and then move into the amendments, but we'll be right back after this break. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Okay, so this Amendment Protection Clause is really clear. And I know we just went into break, so I kind of brushed over this. So if you really look at this very last sentence and you take provided, dot, 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 and then to pick up after the and, provided that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. So when they talk about this, the state, now are they talking about the people? Or are they talking about that sub-element of government? Because the whole concept of the Senate was state representation. The states as sovereigns had their own suffrage regarding anything that was under the responsibility of and or within the realms of the Senate, advice and consent on the appointments of judges and so forth. And so the states were supposed to have suffrage. In other words, what is suffrage? Suffrage is this great concept of earning the right and having the right to vote, to have a voice in government. And so the states could not lose their voice in government. They could not be deprived of its equal suffrage. Now, when they say equal suffrage, that means the equal distribution. Each state had an equal voice. There were two different people that would vote. And so there was no apportionment of representation in the Senate. The Senate was to have equal suffrage. And so no state without its consent could be deprived of its voice in the Senate. So what that means is the 17th Amendment passed, and those states who ratified the 17th Amendment were those states that were bound in maintaining a general election for their senator. In other words, the state legislatures lost their voice. Now, there were seven states, and I know Utah being one, Georgia being another. There were a total of seven states that were that failed to ratify. In other words, they failed to give consent to the 17th Amendment. Therefore, in accordance with this amendment protection clause, they could not be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate because of the 17th Amendment. And why do I say that? Because when you look at the language, when you look at the debates of the 17th Amendment in Congress, there wasn't a peep about Article 5's Amendment Protection Clause. They were ignorant. They were fools. They thought that, oh, well, this is all we need to do. And so they created a conflict. And so what happens when a law becomes a conflict with itself? It is not a law. Consequently, there is argument that the 17th Amendment is illegitimate because it didn't cover this portion of Article 5. So the 17th Amendment may be questionably legitimate, but more importantly, in 2010, actually, let's go to 1913. In 1913, Delaware ratified, or I should say rejected, they formally rejected the 17th Amendment. So they were one of the eight states in the turn of the century, in 2000, that still had not ratified, and they rejected the 17th Amendment. So they were eight states that could have not followed the process and been able to allow the legislatures to continue appointing their senators. For some reason, these states have been duped and said, no, you have to follow it, because they were illiterate as well, because they didn't even understand this line, this little clause existed in the Constitution. So they were duped. Utah and Delaware and all these states were duped. So what do you do now? Okay, well, Delaware in 2010, because Obama and Biden, the huge progressive that wants to see America basically shred the Constitution and ensconce itself in statism and communism. This is why when you listen to what he says, he wants to have a fast track to be able to deploy all sorts of things with technology. He has no enumerated powers to be able to do that. To do that, he has to completely ignore and continue to ignore the Constitution. And folks, what is ending up going to happen if he wins? We will actually see a true revolution, because I believe it will be those people that will be waking up that the state or the federal government is going to go down the path of actually abandoning the Constitution, where states and the people of these states will actually take a stand and say, you can't do that. It's our Constitution. You were created by it. You cannot put it aside. There is no amendment granting you that power and privilege. So anyway, so Biden and the state legislatures of Delaware successfully rejected, in 2010, they successfully rejected, but in 1913, they successfully rejected. In 2010, they actually ratified and formally rescinded their rejection and forwarded their ratification of the 17th Amendment. Okay, so I kind of tripped over myself a little bit in trying to get that out. So I'll repeat it just so that we're clear. 1913, Delaware rejected. They sent that rejection in as, we do not abide by this. We do not agree with this. Now, in 2010, Biden, the progressive, and the progressive mind model that was persisting, and I guess he was, you know, trying to gain credentials amongst the progressives, got the state of Delaware to actually rescind its rejection and formally ratify the Constitution. Well, that was great. Yay, Joe. Because what he did was he successfully opened the door to be able to rescind the 17th Amendment. Because when a state goes down the path and the government accepts it, even though there's no language in the Constitution, we can rescind an amendment. That was attempted with the 14th Amendment. I've talked about that before. I've talked about this quite a bit. So the fact of the matter is that the 17th Amendment, we don't have to repeal it. All we have to do is rescind it. All we've got to do is get enough states. And so how many states is that? Well, we need 13. So all we need is six states. And I'm telling you, folks, once we get enough states, on board with Republic Review, those states, as they come on board, will do two things. One, rescinding the 17th Amendment, and two, ratifying Madison's First Amendment to the Bill of, or the First Amendment that was a part of the Bill of Rights that never got amended. And we will get into those amendments as we close up with Article 7, and then we'll go into the Bill of Rights and the rest of the amendments. I never did this before, but I think it's important. And by the time we get to December for the Bill of Rights, it's just too late. It's just too many other things that are going on. And I'm pretty sure that the majority of you will be, you know, probably gripped by the throes of the revolution instead of working and focusing on repelling this onslaught against our Constitution, standing up and defending it. That's why we go through all of these facts, all of this empirical data. And this is why this academic data is so important, so that you understand what we have to do and how to do this. This is kind of like Bible study, but instead it's the Constitution. I tell people all the time that the Constitution is Scripture. It's not Scripture for the salvation of man. It's Scripture for the governance of man. And it is that clean and that clear. Anyway, Article 6, there are three sections to this. Section 1, all debts contracted and engagements entered into before the adoption of this Constitution shall be as valid against the United States under this Constitution as under the Confederation. Now, what this means is all debts contracted and engagements entered into. What's an engagement entered into? It's pretty simple. An engagement entered into is basically a treaty, an agreement that they have made with another sovereignty or so forth. So, in other words, all debts and promises, engagements with foreign entities and or so forth, before the adoption of this Constitution shall be valid against the United States under this Constitution. So they just wanted to make sure that they sent a message to all the foreign entities that all debts and everything that the Articles of Confederation had created and the agreements that they had created, they were going to honor and support those. So they sent a clear message to say, we're not taking over and giving you the stiffy. What we're doing is we're, giving you the stiff arm is what I meant. But anyway, we're taking over and we're going to honor all of our obligations that we have made with all of those foreign entities with debt and so forth. Now, here's the really interesting or important part. The Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, and anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding. So in other words, this is the supremacy clause. This basically states that anything that the government does that is aligned with the Constitution shall be the supreme law of the land. That's what the whole in pursuance thereof means. Anyway, we're at the end, so we're going to repeat, and we'll just go back over Article 6 again when we start off in our next episode, just as a fair warning. But then we'll get into the Article 7 and the rest of the amendments. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of Liberty.